Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Karen Aaliyah Ford is director of the Writer's Loft program here at MTSU. It is a non-degree, non-credit certificate program in which you can let your muse run amok in a safe environment and learn how to be a better creative writer and perhaps even how to get some of your work published, be it novels, novellas, short stories, poetry, whatever you like to write, even nonfiction. We'll be back to talk with Karen Aaliyah Ford about the Writer's Loft and the art and craft of writing after this from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. 13 MTSU students worked as legislative interns during the most recent session of the Tennessee General Assembly in Nashville. 12 of them gathered recently on the 30th floor of the Tennessee Tower for a celebration luncheon in which university officials, lawmakers, and alumni thanked them for their commitment. MTSU grad Austin Ellis isn't letting an early exit from the NBC singing competition The Voice slow his career path. The 2009 recording industry alum already has a Kickstarter campaign underway for a new album following the conclusion of his reality show experience. And the MTSU Police Department will be conducting a free rape aggression defense class during April for all interested female MTSU students, faculty, and staff, as well as the general public. For MTSU News at any time, go to MTSUnews.com.
Karen, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell me, first of all, a little bit about your background.
Okay, well, I'm originally from South Florida. We moved here about 10 years ago, and I had a friend in common with one of our teachers in the English department, Gaylord Brewer. Gaylord Brewer had seen a story I wrote that won a prize that Ann Patchett had judged, and he called me up and we met, and he began to talk to me about maybe you should come and do some part-time teaching at MTSU. So I began to teach part-time in the English department in 2007. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, recently, this last April, I took over as director of the Writer's Loft program.
So you have been an adjunct since 2007?
I have, just teaching one class, two classes, doing my writing on the side. I graduated with my master in fine arts and fiction writing from Bennington College in 2007. So it was a perfect transition.
And what classes were you teaching or have you been teaching?
I mostly teach the beginning freshman classes.
Composition.
Yes. And I actually enjoy it. I really enjoy those wide-eyed freshmen coming in, not knowing that they're good in English and trying to create something with them that they're proud of at the end, where they have a nice essay that they thought, I didn't know I could do this, and I didn't know I liked English. So I feel like I'm a missionary.
In the Writer's Loft, you might be dealing with some very different types of people, more non-traditional students, maybe people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who've always felt that they could write the great American novel. We all have that fantasy, those of us who like to write, some of us more adept at it than others. Tell me what it's going to be like for you making that paradigm shift from the 18 to 24-year-old, beginning freshman composition student to the non-traditional student who wants to enhance a writing skill they presumably already have.
That is a fantastic question. First of all, I'm not dealing with some of the insecurities that freshmen have. Most of these non-traditional students have already held down jobs, so they know how to show up to something. They know how to produce something. They come with their set of skills that fit in perfectly with us. And then they've always had, like you said, that desire that's been burning in them to either write, or the story has been burning in them for many years before they come to us. And so it's very different than when I'm sitting with freshman students who wonder, what should I write about? I can't think of a thing. And these adult students say, I have too much to write about and I don't know what to tackle first.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your priorities and goals?
For me, I've been in the writing community for a long time. I have a lot of friends who are local, who I know I can call on and ask for favors. So that is probably my talent, is asking for favors. And opening up the students to a wider audience and a more diverse group of people in the local community.
We'll be right back in just a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Tennessee Employment Relations Research Association, or TERRA, gives labor relations specialists and academics a chance to share their views and their data. TERRA wants academics and other interested in human resources and industrial relations to work together at meetings and conferences to strengthen the workplace. Many MTSU faculty belong to TERRA, which has members in 20 states and 7 nations. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Karen Aaliyah Ford, who is an adjunct professor here in the English department and director of the Writer's Loft, our certificate non-degree program for people who want to bring their creative writing skills up to snuff or improve them. Let me ask you, as someone who critiques writing, where is that fine line in between saying to a person, you really need to do this, that, or the other thing, and getting to the edge of tampering with a person's own unique style, because that can be a very sensitive area with some authors.
You're absolutely right. Many of the workshop methods that have been developed in the last 10 years and are in graduate level writing and are now being brought down even to some of our freshman English classes can sort of be a writing by committee, where you're hearing so many voices give their input that you begin to change your own voice. So it is a very delicate situation. I always say, and so do the mentors working with us, that the tie always goes to the author. So if the author is told, well, you might need to do this, and I don't like the way you have that person dying at the end, if that's what the writer wanted, the writer has got to stick with it. And that's one of the things we try and teach, is that confidence and authority over your own work, despite when you're hearing voices coming at you.
When you do try to give constructive criticism to a writer, are there certain phrases that you use so that you'll couch the criticism in a way that it's taken in the spirit in which it's intended?
Exactly. You know, there are, of course, pointing out the positives. And people think when you point out the positives of writing that you're just trying to ease the blow for your next comment that's negative. But in actuality, it is telling that writer, this is what you are good at right here. Whether it's developing a scene, setting, tension. And it's so important for the writer to know, I've got that, that is my strength, and that's what I need to capitalize on. So then when it does get to the suggestions, they can weigh that against, okay, if this isn't working and that's my strong suit, how can I, again, capitalize on that strength and then work on what I'm less good at? Maybe it's a dialogue. But what we always do is also then give examples. We pull things off the bookshelf and say, look at this dialogue that Cormac McCarthy did. And they begin to understand what dialogue sounds like and how to improve it.
And authors who have been hailed as among the greatest write in styles that are not exactly considered proper grammatical English with a subject and a predicate. Virginia Woolf had stream of consciousness. James Joyce had his own very unique style, if anybody's ever tried to read Ulysses. T.S. Eliot's poetry had footnotes. I mean, and there's a debate about whether or not one should attempt to write in an ethnic dialect if one is not a member of that particular ethnicity. So there are a lot of variables here, right?
There are. And, you know, it's always the topic of debate. I attended Swanee Writers Conference a few years ago with my very close friend who's also African-American, and it became this topic, can Anglo-Saxons write in a dialect of African-Americans? Can African-Americans do the same? And we all came to the conclusion of no censorship. You know, we are free to do whatever. However, if we write when it's not grammatical, and we write much more stylistically, like some of these writers you said, that is sometimes a deterrent to publishing. So especially if you're a new author and you haven't published before, you turn something in like E.E. Cummings with no capitalizations, they might not see that that's a style. They might interpret that as a writer who doesn't know what they're doing yet.
And when it comes to writing in your own unique way, your own unique way might be unintelligible. So an author might be stubborn for no good reason about accepting a different way to frame things or a different way to create a flow or, you know. But I take it in the writer's loft, you're open to exploring all different kinds of stylistic changes and appreciations.
This is true. And all of our mentors are very unique in their own way. We have read and written things that are very dark that, you know, if people thought it was really our thoughts, we would be put in jail. And that's what creative writing is all about. So we do have people who experiment, but I'll tell you, many of them, it is very story-based. A lot of the writers come in with a story, and they really want to get it clearly across to the readers. But we do have a few experimental people, and we're fine with anything. Anything that excites the writer excites us.
What kind of a market is out there for authors these days? We keep hearing about so many manuscripts finding their way onto the trash bins of publishing houses. How do you get noticed?
Okay, so this we could do a whole nother show on because it's also has so much to do with luck. I know authors who have no experience. I'm actually working long distance with a 13-year-old. She's written a novel. I told her, well, this is what you need to do next to get an agent. She wrote a beautiful, what we call an agent query. She sent it off, and the agent who represents Stephanie Myers of the Twilight series and John Green sassed her for her first 50 pages.
That's wonderful.
It's amazing. And then we have people who have been writing forever who just, you know, haven't been able to have that breakthrough. So I wish there was a magic, or even a logical way of explaining who gets published and who doesn't. But I can say that going to conferences, networking, although I like to say making friends, but nonetheless, networking is important because a lot of people get introduced to each other's agents.
And it's not just about making contacts. I mean, you can find real, you know, kindred spirit mates among other writers as well. So it's not all a contrived careerist kind of attitude.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's really important because at the end of the day, writers are very singular people who are alone most of the time, and finding a family or a community is important to us emotionally, you know, more than just the context, like you said.
We'll take another brief break here, and we'll be right back with more on MTSU on the Record.
The American Democracy Project is a nonprofit initiative which strives for greater voter registration and civic participation among young people at MTSU and at campuses nationwide. Through encouragement from professors and peers, young adults are shown the value of being more active citizens in their community, their state, and their nation. ADP seeks to nurture programs that raise the campus community's level of engagement with society. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
Our guest today is Karen Aaliyah Ford, who's the director of the Writer's Loft program here at MTSU. Have you encountered writers who try to tailor their writing for a particular market in the hopes that they will sell and sometimes in the process lose their true selves?
Yes. It's very interesting when you find people who want to be published or they want to be a writer. And as a director or, you know, just a writer who's a friend, I would say sometimes I just have to resign myself that some people just want to be published. They can follow a formula. If anyone's read some of the Harlequin romances, you can look on their website. There is a formula of how many characters you have, what page the first person should be introduced, when the fight should happen. So it's very contrived, but that makes some people very happy. They're very okay with that. But as far as losing voice, in the writer's loft, hopefully, we're very open to accepting people, since they are adults and they've already come with their own life experiences, to try and follow them rather than form them into something new. And many of those are taking what is now called indie publishing or self-publishing routes, where they can put it directly onto the Kindle. It's very cheap and they can get it out there, and they aren't being told what to do by an agent or a publisher. Because unfortunately, you're very correct, especially in the publishing industry, they sometimes are looking for books that reflect their last bestseller.
How has the internet changed the game? Would you advise a writer to have his or her own website? You have one for yourself.
I do. And some friends I have friends who are New York agents and a friend who works at Harcourt Mifflin. And that is their main thing. When they are looking to buy in a traditional fashion book, they are looking that the author already has a following. And although we can name plenty of hermits that became great writers, in today's world, it is a little bit changed. I think Twitter is huge. I have just been getting on there to get the word out about The Loft, and there are so many writers on there.
Mm-hmm.
So many, with huge followings of 135,000 people. And so I think that following is important, because when you do come out with a book, you know, you have that market already.
It's a little bit scary, though, because it sort of implies that J.D. Salinger could not survive if he were alive today and just starting his writing career today.
How did you know I was thinking about J.D. Salinger when I said that?
I didn't know. Well, you said loners. I mean, there's the, you know, Philip Roth is not a loner, but he certainly in his personal life had a way of pushing people away from him. We won't get into his marriages and all that business, but no one can deny the brilliance of mm-hmm. Philip Roth.
Right.
Writers are not always the most easy people to deal with sometimes.
How did you know that also? Yes, we're an interesting bunch, I'll tell you. And that's what's so interesting when we all get together for conferences. I mean, we're a scary bunch of people every once in a while. But we also seem, if there's something people love to do, it's have fun when they get together, which is great, getting together with writers. But I think, you know, how did we get into this modern age, and how could some of the people that even 10, 20 years ago began, you know, their great writing careers, how did they do this without all these, you know, Twitter feeds and so forth? I think that is part of our society. We're becoming more isolated. We're not going to parties where we would run into an agent. We're mm-hmm. staying at home. And so we're going to have to try and go with the progress. Personally, I would love to be going to parties where that's how things happen. But I think we're just in a different type of era. I don't know what would have happened to J.D. Salinger if he was starting today and, you know, did not like the internet. I don't know if he would have been published, but we can only hope he would have.
There are some authors who got into the game in the analog era and then held on to their old Underwood typewriters because they've been in the game so long that even as the technology changed, they were just more comfortable with their old Underwood manual typewriters. Mm-hmm. So that's the way they kept it. However, when you've got a track record of 20 or 30 years and you've already got an agent, you've got a publisher, you have an in. You're a known quantity.
So. Exactly. And I think that's, you know, Elmore Leonard, he would still write things longhand. And, you know, we have Annie Proulx and some other people who, it's amazing, you look at their websites and you think, this is very unimpressive, because she doesn't design her website and make it flashy like you see all these, you know, newfangled sites are.
We'll be back in just a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
The annual Baseball and Literature and Culture Conference at MTSU welcomes scholars from all over the country to present papers on numerous baseball-related topics. Their research highlights the national pastime's impact on everything from race relations to the economy and the sport's depiction in poetry and novels. The conference has attracted all-stars and Hall of Famers, including Denny McClain and Ferguson Jenkins. For the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
Karen Aaliyah Ford is our guest, the director of the Writers' Loft here at MTSU. When I talked to Rami Shapiro, your predecessor, and his son Aaron, who is your fellow faculty mm-hmm. member on the English department staff, they have very different and unique writing styles when each of them sits down to actually put words on the screen. What is your own personal methodology, your own personal way of getting? Do you wait for the muse to strike you, or do you sit down, start writing, and as Rami says, even if it's crap, just mm-hmm. keep writing, because eventually you'll get to the good stuff.
Exactly. I'm with Rami on that. I was saying the other day that if you're waiting for the muse, you can forget it, because J.K. Rowling bought them all up. You know, they're all gone. They're partying at Joyce Carol Oates' house. They're not for us. So it really is getting the work in. A lot of people like the Stephen King route, which I sort of do, trying to get a certain amount of words on paper. But pushing myself beyond my comfortable words is, like Rami said, that's where you get uncomfortable, you get tired, and things start coming out that were unplanned and unthought out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm also trying to do that with my freshmen, trying to get them to write and write till they're uncomfortable. They sort of start crying in class and, you know, oh, my hand. But I think it's an important practice.
But they don't start crying like that when they're working their thumbs on
Isn't
their text
that,
messaging.
I know. You are very right about that.
We're going to have an entire generation of people with arthritis in their thumb joints.
That's right.
But 20 years mm-hmm. from now.
Falling over each other because they're looking at their screen. Yes, we've talked about this. Yes.
And so when you write, do you consider yourself to be a fairly good editor of your own material? Do you edit as you go, or do you wait until you think you have a finished product and then go back and edit it?
You know, I'm always playing around. I think I like novelty. I like new things to eat, new things to look at in my life. And I am always trying to reinvent the wheel for myself. I don't know why I make it so difficult. So I'm even starting using a new program that a lot of writers use called Scrivener. And I'm having to learn about the actual software. But what I feel most comfortable is writing a really bad first draft and then putting it away for a while and moving on and then going back, adding to it, subtracting. So that's what I think I feel the most comfortable. But again, I find myself always playing and saying, well, maybe it'll be better if I do the Rick Bragg method, which is write one sentence, go back and read it until you get it perfect, then write the next.
What are you going to tell the Writers' Loft participants about how to get comfortable with their own selves and find their own writing comfort zone, if you will, to just feel the fear and do it anyway? Oh, I don't know what to say. Just start doing something, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what's really good about our deadlines. So they have to turn in about 25 pages if they're writing prose every, you know, 3 weeks or so. So that deadline, there's nothing like, you know, striking a match under someone's bottom and going, let's go, because it gets you motivated and gets you going. So I think that they all will find their own method. We haven't really dealt too much with fear. What usually happens is people will write and turn it in and go, oh my gosh, don't read it though. You know, because you get that fear of rejection.
Well, what's the point? You're writing to be heard, to make your own voice heard. You've got to have somebody read it.
I know. You just feel very unclothed and vulnerable. And, oh, no, I felt comfortable when it was just me and my computer. Mm-hmm. But now there's this person, you know, reading it. And I think that's what's good with that practice of letting it go and feeling comfortable, like you said, do that a few times and you start getting past that fear.
And in the writer's loft, they have mentors, don't they, to hold their hands and sort of help them along the way?
Correct. So it was really devised just like a master of fine arts for people who do not want to pay for that, do not want a degree to teach English at a university. They just want the expertise. So we have mentors, local ones like Gloria Ballard from the Tennessean and Bill Brown, who is known as the Bard of Hume Fog, is a poet. We have Andrea Siegel in L.A. We have Charlotte Rains Dixon, who's in Seattle, with her book. She's a novelist. So we have lots of different people to fit the different genres and personalities of these students.
How many can you accommodate at one time in the writer's loft?
We can accommodate probably as many as want to take it. And because we contract our mentors, mm-hmm. and because, again, I like asking favors of friends like Andrea Siegel, if we get more and we need more mentors, I have a list of people that, you know, are willing, ready, and have the expertise and experience.
More in a moment. This is MTSU News on the Record.
Tennessee's farm families contribute to our state's economy, nutrition, and culture. The Tennessee Century Farms program at MTSU's Center for Historic Preservation acknowledges farms that have been in the same family at least 100 years. To date, the program has certified more than 1,500 farms. There's no cost to nominate a farm or be part of the program. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're back with Karen Aaliyah Ford, director of the Writer's Loft. So there's no cap on the class number or the class size, really, because you're not going to lack for individualized attention, regardless of how many other people are in the Writer's Loft with you.
Correct. It is just the student and the mentor. They work either phone calls, internet. There's no class to attend. There's no fighting for attention. So you are not the only person invested in your work. You have a professional who's already done this, already been published, knows, you know, the craft, and they are investing in your work with you.
And it's worth it because there is no substitute for a professional writer's perspective.
That's right. Everyone had a mentor. Some people even say, oh, well, Hemingway never got a degree and blah, blah. Hemingway had a mentor. You know, you always need your Gertrude Stein, someone you look up to who you want to please and who will help you.
If people want to find out more about the Writer's Loft, how can they get in touch?
The best way is through the MTSU website. You can either go to MTSU and type in the Writer's Loft, or if you go to www.mtsu.edu/theloft, that's where we'll be.
Terrific. Karen Aaliyah Ford, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.